Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Law Commission. I'm the president, and I have with me this morning Professor John Burrows, who was the lead commissioner and consultant on this particular project. As you know, there has been both public and political concern about the harmful use of new communication technologies. You'll be aware that as a result, we have on foot a reference on the new media, and as part of that reference, we've devoted time to this particular phenomenon. The Commission was asked by the Minister responsible for the Commission and the Minister of Justice, Judith Collins, who apparently had discussions with the Prime Minister to expedite this particular subject. We have done so in the form of the ministerial report, which has been distributed publicly, that takes the form of a ministerial briefing paper, but it will be attached to our final report when that's lodged in the House later this year. So effectively we've expedited part of the report because of what we regard as the social importance of the subject. I do emphasise that besides the public concern, responsible agencies such as the coroners, the police, the PPTA have all expressed and articulated their concern that this matter should be given some priority. Can I emphasise that we are satisfied that there is a significant problem in this particular area, and we have suggested that it merits the present attention of Parliament. Quite apart from our own consultations with a number of organisations and the public submissions we received, we commissioned independent research which is set out in the briefing paper, but one figure leapt out at me from there, and that was that in the view of those researchers, 1 in 10 of the sample of 750 people who were surveyed quite intensively indicated that they had personal experience of harmful speech on the internet, and that was a higher figure than I personally would have anticipated, but it's indicative of what is apparently going on out there. In any event, having been satisfied that there is a real and present problem which does need attention, what we've done is to recommend really a four-limbed approach to this whole problem. First, we've recommended the creation of a new criminal offence specifically tailored for bad, if I can put it that way, digital communication. Secondly, we do have a number of other statutes in our law in New Zealand which have provisions which, with a bit of tweaking and tinkering, can be better adjusted to enable those criminal offences to come into play too. Things like the Harassment Act, for instance, just needs a little bit of adjustment to pick up this kind of subject matter. Thirdly, we've emphasised the establishment of an authority to enable takedown and cease and desist orders and things like that to be made. You have to have an agency that can do that. Professor Burrows will say much more about that in a moment. And we've also, as a fourth limb, suggested some changes to the legal regime for New Zealand schools. We know perfectly well, because this is a social problem, that our recommendations will not take care of all of the problems. We do think that they are a distinct step in the right direction, the object being, of course, as is said in the paper at one point, really to make us all better digital citizens, which is a phrase which has come into currency. And we do think that what we've recommended will distinctly assist in that particular endeavour. I'll turn it over to you, John, if I may, at this point, to enlarge on the details. And, of course, we're more than happy to entertain questions and comments later in the session. Thanks, John.
Thanks very much, Sir Grant. And thank you all for coming this morning. It's very good to see you here. Well, Sir Grant's explained the background to this project. It's just part of a wider one we're doing on the new media in general. But it's the bit of it that the Minister has asked us to speed up. And what it's about, basically, is people sending truly offensive messages to and about other people, which cause those other people real harm. And when you read some of the examples in our report, they make your hair stand on end. People being threatened, accompanied by pictures of mutilated dead bodies, this kind of thing, and examples of a young woman being violated and pictures being spread around the class and others, forcing her to leave the school. So there are some pretty horrible examples. So we are persuaded now that something does need to be done. And I might say it's not just a young person's problem. NetSafe tells us that of about 75 complaints they get a month, about half involve adults and not young people. So it's not just a school problem, it's a societal problem. Well, just before we get started on some of the detail, I think we might ask, why are we concerned just with digital communications? You know, what's different about them? And the fact is, I think they're a whole new world. First of all, they get a much, much wider audience, and they can spread virally very quickly. So before you know what's happened, the whole world is watching and perhaps joining in. They can last and be quite hard to get rid of. Also, when you go home, you can't leave it behind. If it's physical bullying, you can go inside and shut the door. But if it's this kind of bullying on the internet, on the computer, on the cell phone, it's with you all the time. So it's much more invasive. And of course, there's the anonymity factor too, which can add to some of the threat behind it. Sometimes you don't even know who's written the message. How does it hurt people? Depends on the person. But there's clear evidence there are educational impacts, some students' school performance does suffer. There are examples of considerable emotional distress, and as you've probably read and know, some coroners are telling us that this kind of communication lies behind, or is at least part of the causative thread of some young suicides. It's very hard to establish this, of course, and one can never say it's the sole cause, but they seem to have no doubt that it's one of the causative factors in some of this terrible and unfortunate behaviour. And we're told by police, NetSafe, Human Rights Commission, the teachers' unions, that there is a serious and growing problem. So that's what we're looking at. So we're a law commission, and our question is, what can the law do about it? And as Sir Grant has very aptly said, it's not just a legal problem, of course. People have to be taught how to behave digitally responsibly. I like this term, digital citizenship, and I think it does convey a message that people need to be taught how to look after themselves and others. And that's perhaps easier said than done. But also, responsible websites now have their own self-moderation processes. And if they get complaints, they investigate and they do take stuff down just when you ask them. And I might cite a New Zealand Trade Me as a very responsible and good example of that practice. But it's not the same everywhere. And some websites have no moderation at all. And it's extraordinarily hard to moderate something like Twitter. I mean, you just can't do it, really. It's very difficult to do. So that's the message, that the law is only one part of this, but we see it as a very important part. And we've tried to attack it on two main fronts. The first is to look at the existing law and see whether it's fit for purpose in this modern age of ours. Our Crimes Act's been around in pretty much the same form for over 100 years. And when we first read it, we saw that some of its provisions are actually quite okay now. If you threaten to kill someone, it doesn't matter how you do it, face-to-face, by letter, by telephone, or digitally, that act will cover you. But there are gaps nonetheless. The law is lagging behind in some areas, and we've felt that some of it just needs to be tweaked a bit to make it fit for purpose in this age. The Harassment Act's a good example. To harass somebody under that act, you have to do the same thing twice in 1 year, which sounds an extraordinary thing. If you have a continuing message up on the website for 6 months, that is every bit as harmful, even more harmful, than two separate instances. So we think it has to be reformed in that way for a start. We think the Privacy Act needs to be brought up to date a bit in that regard. But there's also some quite serious gaps, we felt. There is a law about inciting suicide now. You're not allowed to do it, of course, but it's only a crime if the person actually does the suicide or attempts to do so. And we think that's leaving things a bit late. So we would make it a crime just to incite suicide, to encourage people to commit suicide, full stop. The possible consequence is so devastating that you've got to take some sort of action quickly. So that's just one example. But one of the main things we've recommended is a new offence in the Summary Offences Act of grossly offensive communication. And we've tried to tailor it fairly specifically. You're required to show that it was grossly offensive, not just a bit annoying, but grossly offensive, that the person intended to hurt or must have known that it would hurt. And it was such a communication that would hurt a person in these circumstances. We don't fix penalties, but if that is passed, the government will decide on the appropriate penalty. Similar things in the Summary Offences Act carry penalties like, say, 3 months imprisonment. Now, you might say, is this overkill? No, it's not. We've had for a long time now a Telecommunications Act saying if you annoy somebody over the telephone, that's a criminal offence. All we're saying is you extend that kind of thing to the written word as well as the oral word. And that just seems to be perfectly good sense. And Britain's had a very similar offence to the one we're proposing for over 20 years. And they do prosecute under it from time to time. Now, we hope that wouldn't need to be used much at all. But the mere fact it's there itself delineates what's acceptable behaviour. It will serve as a deterrent. And if occasionally an example is made of someone who's behaved really, really badly, we think that'll be a very useful thing for school principals to be able to say to students, this is a criminal offence, and if you carry on, you'll be prosecuted. And the police will get some certainty as to the boundaries of what they can do. So even if that offence is not prosecuted often, and we hope it doesn't have to be, it'll serve a real purpose by being there, we think. But just changing the law doesn't do everything. The question is enforcement. Now, the message we're getting from all sorts of people is that if this kind of communication happens now, a lot of people just feel helpless and they don't know where to go or what to do. They might go to the police and they may be told, this is not a criminal offence, we can't do anything. And the police, of course, are pressed for resources, as we know. School principals may simply feel there's nowhere they can go, try to deal with it themselves. If people know NetSafe exists, they'll go to them now, and they do. But NetSafe is pretty low profile, and without statutory backing, there's a limited amount it can do. But what it does extremely well. Some people may decide they want to go to court and sue for defamation. As we all know, that's a painful, long, expensive process. Defamation's an old court action. It can go on for years, and it's just not realistic for many ordinary people. So court actions sometimes are just more than some people either can or want to put up with. So what we think is necessary is a well-publicised complaints procedure, a one-stop shop where people know where they can go to say, I've got this terrible problem, what can you do for me? Something which will operate quickly, cheaply, relatively informally, and, I emphasise, effectively, can actually do something. And we're seeing that as in two processes. First of all, we think there should be what we've called an approved agency. Now, we could have gone to a commission, created a commission, but that's unnecessary. What we think is that there should be an agency like, say, NetSafe, which is given a statutory approval as an agency which can do this kind of thing, a sort of statutory backing. It would receive complaints about this kind of behaviour. It would reject some as being not sufficiently serious, quite a few, I suspect. But those that were serious, it would try to mediate a solution. It would need to build relationships with bodies like Facebook, other large websites, the education system, the police. And NetSafe is into that area now, and does it well. So if a solution could be negotiated in that way, that's ideal, and we think many problems could be. It's somewhere to go to have somebody help you to get a solution. But if that process didn't work, we think there needs to be a backing, a backstop, if you like, in the form of what we've called a tribunal, who would be a judge who can say, this is a serious matter, and we order you to take that message down and stop doing it. Just a judicial order that this is unacceptable and that it must stop. Now, this is more than NetSafe can do. That is a directive order. And the message we're getting from NetSafe itself, from the police, from the PPTA, bodies like that, is that this will be an enormously helpful to have at the end of the line, that you can say there is now somewhere where we can get a definitive order to protect this person. That tribunal would not have any kind of criminal sanction. It couldn't put people in jail or anything. It would simply be a protective one, saying, take this down and stop doing it. Should be cost effective. We're suggesting it just be a panel of district court judges, of whom you would pick one to try each case. And it would have an informal process, might even operate by video conference, could operate quickly and do things very quickly. There'd have to be a high threshold before it made an order. You'd have to show that the person had tried other means, like had been to NetSafe or a body like that, and that had failed, or that the matter was extremely serious and that mediation wasn't appropriate. You'd have to show, too, that significant harm is being caused, significant emotional distress, and that's quite a high threshold, and also that the person putting out the message has broken the law. And what we've tried to do there is to have a set of 10 legal principles which don't exactly summarise the law, but are derived from the existing law and the law we're recommending. Just a series of 10 simple principles of good internet use, and it would have to be shown you'd broken one of those. And they'd be things like, you must not post grossly offensive messages, you mustn't make denigratory comments about a person because of their race or sexual orientation, you mustn't post sensitive personal facts about people without their permission, things of that sort. But it would have to be shown too that real harm had been or was likely to be caused. Is this overkill? No, it's not. We've had a Privacy Act for nearly 20 years, which operates in pretty much the same way. If people infringe my privacy, I can go to the Privacy Commissioner and try and mediate a solution. If that fails, I can go to the Human Rights Review Tribunal. So that's the kind of model. This, we would see, though, is a slightly trimmed down, perhaps slightly faster operating model. And we've had for some 15 years now a Harassment Act, in which if people are harassed by being followed or telephone messages, that kind of thing, they can actually go to the district court and get that stopped. We're suggesting a kind of mini harassment court, which would be specialist in internet communications. And we think the best way of doing it is to have a district court judge, accompanied if necessary by an IT expert. So this is not rocket science. It's not taking things a long way down the road. And because judges are there already, it wouldn't cost much at all to set up. So we think that money-wise, it's not bad value for money. You might have a couple of questions. What if the perpetrator of the offence or of the communication is anonymous? And we do have some pages on that in the report. And we believe that NetSafe ought to be able to ask the ISP or the website host, the intermediary if you like, to track that message and give the name. And again, you could try to make them or get that person to take it down. If all of that fails, the tribunal could make an order that that name be disclosed. And I see there's a case in Britain quite recently where Twitter has been directed by a court to disclose the name of a communicator. This won't often be necessary because in the great majority of cases, people who have been victimised know who's doing it. They know who it is and they're in the country. Another question we've been asked is, what if you have to do with Facebook or a big offshore corporation? They're not within our jurisdiction. To which the answer is no, they're not. And you can't, of course, in our courts here, force Facebook to do anything. But they have protocols now that if there's a court order, they will actually act on it. They're responsible citizens. So we'd like to see, if all this is set up, NetSafe, or the approved authority, making protocols with the big overseas corporations, getting them to agree on a process that if they're approached, they will abide by this tribunal's orders and they will take down where necessary. So that's the way we'd like to see it working. We, in the end, in our last chapter, talk about the education system. Now, I want to emphasise just two things at this point. First of all, we're a law commission, we're not an education commission, and we're interested in the law on this as it affects schools. We can't tell the schools how to educate their students, and we certainly would not want to do that. And the second thing I would say is that schools every day have to cope with a lot of problems that are not of their own making. It's not the school's fault that these things are going on between school kids. But the schools have them there on the premises for 5 days a week, and they get caught up in it. And it's important that processes are in place for them to know how to deal with it. And they, we think, need tools to help them. So as far as the law goes, we're saying, first of all, we think the schools could be helped by having an approved agency like NetSafe and a tribunal at the end of the road, and maybe the new offence too. So principals can say, if this doesn't stop, we're going to take you outside the school to an authority to ensure that this does get better. We also think that there's merit in the idea of IT contracts between schools and their pupils, where the pupils agree to abide by good principles of communication. And we think that the ones we're suggesting in our draft bill may be a useful starting place. These are the things you just don't do, unless there's a really, really good reason for it. We also think the education legislation is not specific enough. There's what they call a national administrative guideline, or set of guidelines. They call them the NAGs. And NAG 5 says all schools must have a safe environment. But it doesn't go any further than that. And we would like to see added to that a requirement that there be effective anti-bullying policies and processes in the school. Policies and programs. Now, that was recommended by Ombudsman David McGee last year in his report on the Hutt Valley High School. It just needs to be lifted up to a legal requirement. Private schools don't even have a legal requirement to have a safe environment. There's nothing in their act about it at all. And we've recommended before that should happen, and we think it should. So this just gives the whole thing a higher profile. And while this is getting beyond our mandate, we would like to see the Ministry of Education helping schools to get details, monitoring of bullying, how much is going on, with achievable goals for trying to reduce the incidence of it. So we're suggesting that the Ministry might like to look at those things. Now, I've no doubt this sort of thing is beginning to happen already. We're aware of the what they call the Positive Behaviour for Learning initiative, and that's being funded. And we've no doubt that as time goes by, steps are being taken. But we just like to see it given high profile, because it's a problem everywhere, the schools included. So that's really the guts of it. We think there's a serious problem. The law is not the only solution to it, but the law can do something. And we'd like to think our recommendations are proportionate. They won't cost a lot of money. And we think they are reasonable and rational things we should be doing. That's about it, really.
Thank you, John. We're happy to field questions or comments that anybody wants to make or raise.
What if the bully doesn't adhere to the judicial review? You say there's not any power beyond making the review from that judge at that time?
The rule would have to be if the judge makes an order, which would be a judicial order, it would be an offence not to comply with it.
Yeah.
So if the person does not comply, they then go to the district court and be sentenced. And the legislation would have to say what the penalty for that was. But it could be a fine or imprisonment. But once the tribunal has made an order, that's a judicial order like any other judicial order, and it would carry consequences if you didn't comply with it.
Has New Zealand been a bit slow out of the blocks here? And the technology's been around for a while. Mm. Other countries have brought in laws to protect against it. Why have we been a bit slow?
I don't know why we've been a bit slow, but I say Britain's had an offence like the one we're proposing for about 20 years, and it updated it 9 years ago. So we're certainly behind the pace there. I can't say why that's happened. When you look at some of the American state legislation, that some of that is now becoming quite prescriptive, and schools are required to have policies in place in 36 states. And there's even prescriptions in some of the acts over there as to how long a student can be suspended for if they do this kind of thing. So they've certainly moved into it. You ask why we haven't. Don't know. But now's our chance, and this is the chance to make up some lost ground.
In my day, you had to wear your cap when you went downtown to be a proper citizen. In this day and age, this sort of stuff is patently more more important, although one or two headmasters might still not agree with me. It's coming to grips with a phenomenon of our age, isn't it? And regardless of whether we've been a little slow off the mark or whether we haven't, its time is certainly now.
Is there a danger that by bringing in legislation and stricter controls that it's actually going to encourage more of the bullying to become anonymous? And let's face it, there are 100 ways you can do something anonymously, even with the measures you suggest.
That is a possibility, but you have to have measures in place to control that. And one is that we think the tribunal would have to have power to require, actually to require that the name be disclosed, because they can usually be tracked. Some people don't realise this, but there are means in which you can, with the proper technology, track this. So there have to be that kind of backup.
But there's still many ways that you could get around that, isn't there? I mean, you could buy a prepaid cell phone, text and send volume to somebody, and the name would never be divulged because it's,
a cunning person can always evade the law. Cunning people evade the tax law all the time. People still commit murder and get away with it. So you'll never actually cover all loopholes. But in the great majority of cases, you can track who it is. And most people haven't got the smarts to do it in that way. So we think that in almost all cases, you'll have a pretty good idea who it is. They'll be within the country, and there's things you can do. But in cases where you can't, there's going to have to be a power in the tribunal to actually require the website host to say, yes, it's that person, and we can track them. Yeah.
So as you say, these are recommendations at this stage from the Law Commission.
Yep.
Talk us through the process. You mentioned later in the year that it'll be put forward. What next?
Well, as you know, there's been interest from the Prime Minister's office down on this, and the Prime Minister's overseas at the moment for good and sufficient reasons. Otherwise, something might have been heard on this at this time. I don't know. But certainly every indication we've had, and that we're an advisory body, it's a matter for the administration, but all the indications we've had is that there is a significant present interest in it. What normally happens, of course, is that our proposals are evaluated in the normal course of events, and something like this would then be discussed, if necessary, at a cabinet level. But it's not a complicated thing to do in this instance. This is not a complicated piece of legislation to bring into effect if the administration chooses to run with it.
Have you got a time frame in mind?
Well, that's for the government to set.
Yeah.
Because the Minister has speeded up our report and asked us to report early, that would suggest they see some urgency in it. And also, if you see our full report, you'll see there's a draft bill at the back of it, which has been drafted for us by Parliamentary Council Office, so that could actually speed things up quite a lot. So the draft bill is actually there now.
You said of the 750 people who surveyed, 1 in 10 experience harmful speech on the internet. What constitutes harmful speech?
Of course, to some extent it's a subjective thing, but there is some speech which, when you just look at it, you can say that is totally unacceptable. And the people we talked to, which our survey did for us, were all people who said we felt that went beyond the pale and we were affected by it. Now, obviously there'd be degrees there, and if our tribunal comes into effect, they would only deal with cases where there's been significant there. And you can tell when there has been, because you just look at the communication, you can tell by the nature of it. Some of it is just absolutely beyond the pale.
Can you give us any examples?
Well, I gave some in the intro. If I get a message threatening to kill me, and there is a photograph of the mutilated body beside it, I'd be pretty upset by that. And if that happened several times, I'd be even more upset. If I were a school teacher and I was on a website disclosing my sexual orientation, my sexual practices, which is happening, I'd be pretty upset by that as well. If I had a relationship that had broken up and pictures of me in intimate situations were published by my former partner on the web, I'd be upset by that. And these are all things that are happening. I won't say all the time, but on such a basis that we think something's got to be done.
Why is the mystery under the new offence you proposed that the communication must cause harm? Isn't just the communication
in itself? It might, but I think you need that additional strength there. And the Privacy Act has it now too.
Yeah.
You don't have a privacy complaint, it's a significant harm. It really is to stop people who are perhaps a little too precious, a little too worried about their own appearances, yeah. making trivial complaints. Otherwise, any criminal would get flooded with trivial complaints. Mm. So harm is an important part, I think, of the criminal law. You've got to show there's some harm you're trying to address.
It's also consistent with fundamental criminal law principles. So you don't intrude the criminal law under our regime anyway unless there is harm. What is significant in this particular instance, as Dr. Burrows had mentioned, is that it's an extended definition of harm here, because normally emotional distress would not be considered to be harmful. The particular proposed section, for those of you who are interested in the bill, is section 21A, if you want to look it up. And the kind of conduct, just skimming over it quickly, that would be caught is grossly offensive behaviour of an indecent, obscene or menacing character, or which is knowingly false. So, gross rumour mongering, for instance.
Yeah, or false Facebook pages, yeah. which I won't say, they're not uncommon, where people defame people by making believe they actually wrote the Facebook page.
If the threshold is harm, why didn't you suggest that it should be an offence to incite suicide, even if suicide doesn't take place?
Because the mere potential of it doing so, or the likelihood that it might, in that disastrous case, is sufficient, we think, to merit an offence. And we do say causes serious harm, or is likely to cause it.
Perhaps I should also emphasise, too, that the offence doesn't kick in if somebody tells you that they saw it relating to you. You have to have seen it yourself. So you've got to be an actual victim who has seen this and been affected by it, and it's had this effect on you. Otherwise, the reach of the section would be just too wide.
But we understand there are messages of a kind where somebody in distress is saying, I feel suicidal, to which the reply is, well, go and do it, who cares? And that's not great conduct. And we think that the mere fact that that might induce the person to do so is a sufficient likelihood of serious harm to merit some action.
You've obviously got extensive knowledge of the criminal fraternity and everything through your experiences as a judge. Were you surprised by the extent and the viciousness of some of the bullying examples you saw?
Yes, I was, to be quite frank. One had a general awareness of it, and I should say that in professional life before becoming a judge, I was very much an intellectual property lawyer, so I had an interest in this area. Quite apart from the whatever the legislative outcome is here, I think with respect it's a valuable report in the way in which it documents, if you look at the chapters of the various incidents have occurred, what really is going on out there. The information is reliable in our view. It's not just people saying this is one of these things that's going on and should be stopped. It has a solid empirical basis.
And supported by authorities like the police as well, and NetSafe itself. So they certainly believe there's evidence out there.
So when you took a sample of 750 people, where did you select those from? Who were those people?
That was done by a survey company for us. And they have groups that they use for that purpose.
Other matters?
Do you think there'll be much of an appetite for a new government agency?
One of the reasons we've done this, we're not asking them to create anything. The judges who'll hear this are judges already there. NetSafe is already there and just needs to be given some statutory backing. So this is one of the reasons we've done. There is no new agency going to be created here. You're simply building on what's already there, which is an economical and, we think, a very cost-effective way of doing it. NetSafe may need more resources, but it's not the same as building up a brand-new commission from the ground, enhancing the capability of an existing organisation, something very different from that.
Anything else? Well, thank you very much for taking the time and trouble to come today. There are indications